Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the July 2022 ADM Farm Direct Fertilizer Report. This monthly conversation is intended to help you stay on top of global fertilizer prices and buy in bulk at the most opportune time. I'm your host, Zach Jans, and today we have a lot of stuff to cover, and hopefully a short time. We have Brian Henry with ADM BQCI. He's going to give us an update on what's going on in the grain world. And then after Brian, we're going to go with Jake Nieder to give us an update on fertilizers and what's been going on in that world. Then after that, we'll open the floor up for questions. So Brian, if I got you, we'll let you get going on what's going on in the grain world.
Good morning, everyone. I am Brian Henry with BQCI. We work out of the Minneapolis office. Our information can be found at bqci.com, and primary objectives of this desk is the risk management feature related to these grains. And the reason I bring up risk management is everyone on this call has been heavily involved in the price action of corn, wheat, soybeans over the course of the last couple of months, and it has been a wild ride. It doesn't appear that wild ride is over just yet. What we have seen is markets that rallied sharply on a number of different items. Primary feature behind it, of course, was concern about supply, whether it be out of the Black Sea or other locations. And then in addition to that, we continued to look at where demand was going to be going forward and relating that quite closely with what we'd seen for demand for prior years. What's ended up playing out here over the course of the last couple of months is you've seen significantly high prices. You've seen significantly aggressive fund buying, institutional type capital that has come into these markets. You have seen situations where some demand has been reduced into a number of locations. I'll touch on that in a bit. And finally, it feels like we just got to a price on these markets that nobody was going to be willing to pay. Though that wasn't always evident in the domestic demand, and it feels like there's still some domestic demand to cover. The fact of the matter is, at this point, especially for the bean market, we're just not seeing the amount of demand we'd like to be seeing from China. And without that demand, it just feels like the market was justified softening to these levels. And if the demand doesn't show itself here, I think you could anticipate that the market softens even more in terms of the bean market. Now, I believe that demand is out there. I believe the Chinese will up their game. But when I look at what's going on in China right now, we've seen some draconian COVID restrictions that certainly hurt their economy. They've got a problem on the mortgage side in terms of people paying mortgages. That's probably the largest asset class on the globe, real estate in China. Some of the news that's come out here of late indicates that China just simply may not need as many beans as they've needed historically. You've got recent estimate, China's sow herd is about 42.8 million head. That is up 2% from May, but it's down about 6% year over year. The biggest consumer of beans, of course, on the globe are Chinese hogs. You have some people estimating that Chinese bean imports may be as low as 86 million metric ton versus USDA at 90 in terms of what China may have to import from beans. How does that all come together? Well, we're going to have to see how quick they can get that economic engine back in shape. Regarding November beans, I have a reason to believe the market could use a little more risk premium in here right now, though we haven't seen a real good look at what August weather will look like. I believe we find a situation in here where the November bean market can press back towards $14 to 14 and a quarter. But I also have a strong belief that that has the potential to be enough. So basically, where we went to a market that looked like it wasn't going to ever quit rallying, it feels like right now we've got a market where people may try to buy the dips, but it feels like rallies are going to merit some selling on the bean side of things. In terms of the corn market, again, we're not seeing the global demand for U.S. supply. You've got a situation where the market has broken significantly and is comfortable at times trading below $6. To me, it feels a little cheap down here. If we were closer to having the crop we believe we have, I think under $6 is justified. but the market feels perhaps a touch oversold. I get it. The weather forecasts have improved. I personally can't use a yield estimate on corn that's much different than 1.77. I can't disagree with the 1.5 billion bushel ending stocks number on corn. But one of the pieces I do look at here, I guess, is the fact that the market had gotten a little bit oversold. And it's primarily that reason, plus the likelihood that we generate one additional weather scare in here somewhere, that gives me belief that the corn market can push back to 645 to 650, potentially even 660 based on the charts. But at that point, it feels like it's going to be probably plenty in terms of a recovery. So we're sitting here in a situation where the markets have changed significantly. We've gotten back into a spot where I believe people are justified to sell rallies. I think you can let rallies develop a little bit if they develop at all. We don't have a lot of answers in terms of Ukraine and the supplies that are going to be able to come out of the Black Sea, but it does look like actions have been taken that will allow Russia a little more access in terms of financing, insurance, things of that nature. I think there's still a lot of question about Ukraine, but at this point, it feels like the market can remain soft just based on the fact that demand is limited. And then from a wheat standpoint, that one's seen the biggest correction, actually. And again, we're in a spot where you just don't see people falling over each other to buy a whole bunch of U.S. supply, despite U.S. supply being as competitively priced as it's been for quite some time. I'd put wheat in the same book. We're probably going to have to sell rallies in that market. But again, I think you can let them develop here a little bit. So with that, I've probably taken enough of your time. I'll turn it back to Zach.
Thanks a lot, Brian. I know there's a pile to digest here over the last couple of weeks with corn board and bean board and wheat board kind of falling out of bed. So appreciate the insight on that. Jake, I guess we'll run over to you. UAN Phil, Southwest Fertilizer Conference, all these things going on. You know, we had UAN Phil that came out yesterday and numbers fell pretty well in line with what we were kind of thinking here out of production points and terminal points. CF came out with what I would consider halfway attractive numbers as it relates to production points, but terminals, they asked for a little bit more of a premium on some of that stuff. Jake, what do you make of the markets here today?
Yeah, and I want to apologize to the team. BK was not able to join us this week. Normally, he's been a mainstay on our call. He was down at the Southwest Conference, and he ended up catching COVID while down there. So apologize, he's not able to attend with us this morning. He's lost his voice and recovering, but doing well. So I was going to start my speech this morning saying that we've got the fill number and clear direction, and then we have an Indian tender this morning that does change how I was viewing the fill. So let's start with the Indian tender because it's the one that's the most recent. We have offers into the Indian government for tons that they're going to be taking. The offers came in probably about $60, $70 cheaper, maybe one could argue $100 cheaper than what the market was expecting. So we expect to see some pressure on the global urea market. What does that mean for NOLA? Well, we were the pressured market. We were the undervalued market. And everything that we have done over the last 30 days, you look at our sales, you look at the market sales, it's been mostly for export. And that's really what sustained the NOLA market price. So as that goes away, as that dissipates, we could see some sell pressure begin to occur at NOLA. We've seen a little bit of pullback this morning in the barge pricing on urea. And really, this is going to be our future here for the next 4 or 5, 6 months. Things that don't matter to our S&D, to our local market, really driving our price. So let's talk about the things I'm watching and keeping an eye on and things I think are going to be big movers. Obviously, we can't have a conversation about nitrogen pricing and not mention natural gas in Europe. That's going to be one of the biggest drivers. Right now, we're being told that they're going to get their gas supplies turned back on. You also have the EU Commission telling all countries to figure out how to use 15% less to help curb the pricing. They're anticipating very high prices this winter. They're anticipating that the Russian government will use natural gas as a weapon or as a fight against sanctions. And so they're anticipating a lot of volatility. Right now on paper today, if you were to run these plants in Europe, and the reason why we talk about this, Europe is usually a pretty sustainable area, and we don't talk about European demand very much because they're kind of producing what they need. They don't really import that much. They call on a little bit there in France and Spain and in Italy, but it's not significant enough to really get our attention. But what's happening is they're shutting down very large-scale nitrogen plants. They're setting them idle, they're reselling the gas. All of these things are occurring to decrease the supply available to the European market. So now all of a sudden, Europe's becoming more relevant, and it's something that we've got to watch from a demand perspective. So what that means is over the next 4 to 5 months, as we head into the winter time frame, we're going to see a lot of volatility on pricing of natural gas, and therefore a lot of volatility on the floor price of nitrogen. It's our belief that you need to have some production coming out of Europe to balance the S&D. And so therefore, we're going to have to trade up to those global levels of where European cost of production is at. And so when we talk about what's going to be one of the price setters that we look at, that's going to be probably the top end, if you will, of what's setting price or what's pulling tons out of the U.S. for export. Therefore, that's one thing that we have to keep in mind. We can sit here and say, hey, nobody needs to buy till spring of next year, 100% correct. But Europe's going to take some of those tons away, and they're going to slowly bleed out our S&D to the point where we were maybe self-sufficient on a product or close to it. We now need more imports to come in that March, April, May, June timeframe. So essentially, we're trying to figure out how this balances. There's a lot of things that can move, natural gas being number one that we keep an eye on. Number two, we need to readdress the duty piece on UAN. That was one thing that we were keeping our eye on. That has been settled at the moment. The International Trade Commission came out and did not levy duties against imports of UAN from Trinidad and Russia. As you're aware, that's made some volatility in pricing. So now we go back to market fundamentals. And what we saw is a fill number be announced yesterday by one of the major U.S. producers. And that fill number was really in line with historical spreads of urea and of ammonia. And so in my mind, I was starting to think, well, maybe we'd see a little bit more demand go back towards UAN and see a little bit of uptake on this fill number. Well, now we have the Indian tender, so it creates some uncertainty. What looked like a pretty solid buy still looks like a solid buy from a UAN perspective, but relative to the spreads historically, it's maybe a tiny bit expensive. We're talking 6 to 8 cents spread now versus what we were looking at as maybe 2 to 4 cents, depending on your region. So that's something that we're going to have to keep our eye on here is how much fill is done. Now, the one thing that we have to keep in mind when we talk about UAN fill, when we get into the interior market, we do have producers that have some pricing power. They have a majority of market share. And so it's very important to take some of what they say at face value. I know that that's difficult for a lot of us because we're always skeptical. But what we're being told here is that this is the cost that it's going to take to balance out the market on this first round of fill. And so we're of the opinion that you need to look at some of the fill volume of UAN for this year and take advantage of having tank space and looking at buying in your summer needs right now. So again, the number they came out with was a July-August shipment window. And they're incenting the market to use their storage, saying, hey, here's going to be a little bit cheaper than what we're seeing the rest of the year. We kind of buy into that story because that's very similar to what we saw last year. Then we have similar economics to what we saw last year, similar volatility as well. So the market feels like we're going to kind of start out looking similar to what we did a year ago. And if you recall back, the numbers that we transacted in the June-July timeframe were some of the lowest that we were able to transact throughout the year. So our recommendation is look to get somewhere between 35 and 50% of your UAN needs bought for fill right now. And then let's see what happens during the winter months as we have another kind of round two, if you will, of looking for some homes in the winter timeframe. The danger to that strategy, though, is the energy play. My comment about waiting does disregard the fact that there's volatility in the energy complex. And when we typically see UAN maybe looking for homes again in the winter, calling on all forms of energy and very high prices of natural gas, so therefore high prices of nitrogen, we could see a very much repeat. What takes that away and what keeps a repeat from happening from last year? We're going to have that war end. We're going to have sanctions start to fall off. We're going to have some stability in the energy market. I'm not an energy trader, far be it for me to make recommendations on that, but I do think that you have to give that some consideration. As most of us are going to say, hey, let's wait, it's high price, let's wait. I think that's a very common reaction right now, might not be the smartest of reactions given the overall structures and fundamentals of the market. Another huge factor that we need to pay attention to is what's going on in China. So I'm going to pivot a little bit. China's kind of all over the board. We're hearing mixed messages. And I wish BK was on the call. He might help us feel a little bit better about that one. But China, we're seeing that, hey, we're going to do government-to-government deals with Europe, and we're going to make tons available, and we're going to help fertilizer prices not go up. And then you also see restrictions and quotas on exports of their goods. So in my opinion, and the rising cost of coal and whatnot over in there in that area, you've seen a increase in the floor price from those low 200s up into the mid 300s. And so we're seeing the policy, or if you will, the floor price of energy move up a little bit in China. So therefore, they're going to have their target set a little bit higher as well in what the return should be. We don't know what to count on here for tons out of China because the policy is somewhat unclear. We are seeing tons come out. That's what's coming out of this IPL tender is most likely tons out of China. So for now, we're seeing some flow out of the country and we're seeing it at a more aggressive price. That could change very quickly as they start to see energy, food, or fertilizer price inflation. They have positioned that they'll start doing that again in the third quarter. I expect that to happen as well, but we will kind of wait and see an update over the next couple months. So China still remains a huge factor. The last factor I think that we have to talk about, which is very real, and it's the hand-to-mouth buying. It's happening in every region. This has led to a lot of de-inventorying at the farmer level. It's led to de-inventorying at the retailer level. I'm not here saying the system's empty. I am saying the system's trying to empty. People are trying to carry less risk. And so therefore, there will be that quicker spike in prices that maybe we've not felt in the past because of the lack of inventory being carried throughout the global market. And so that's also going to be a factor in pricing, especially when we see volatility. We'll have quick rises up, slow come downs on pricing. And so it's going to be a little bit of a stickier market as we go forward into these winter months. So saying a lot of general things, try to be specific as well. But let's pivot off nitrogen now because we've talked about urea, what we're doing here. We've talked about UAN. Ammonia is going to continue to remain tight. It's a tight supply into the local market. We've found some floors in Tampa where prices are clearing, but we do have some industrial pressure on consumption of ammonia as the industrial sector comes under a little bit of pressure from the market, from the higher interest rates. We could see a little slowdown in ammonia consumption as well. Wouldn't expect to see that translate into major price moves until we get through this year and start to see some December, January price changes. So into phosphates, what are we seeing there? We're seeing the U.S. market still trade a discount to the world. We're seeing that tons in the U.S. are leaving out of Tampa and out of NOLA to go to all other regions. We're seeing the U.S. producer not offering a cheap fill program and basically saying that we're going to sell at the international equivalent. And we're seeing those tons start to leave the U.S. market. Should we be worried yet? No, because of this hand-to-mouth buying has not really called for people to start pricing. Something we need to keep an eye on, though, if you expect to step in and find your tons in October, the market does feel thinner on amount of tons inbound, as well as inventory in the river system or throughout the terminal network. Not saying you won't find it, but I am saying you'll probably have to pay up for it. So we expect a little bit of short-term volatility in pricing, more to the upside. Overall, though, the trend is a little bit backwardated in phosphates. See a pullback there in fourth quarter as we get into the winter months again and see the market normalize probably in the high 600s to low 700s as we get into December, January timeframe. So it doesn't leave people wanting to carry over tons, therefore less inventory on hand throughout the whole system. Potash, we see it similarly. The oligopoly is definitely holding prices. Market is sending a very clear signal, export tons out of the U.S., export tons out of Canada. It's doing so. It's using non-traditional ways of exporting those tons. NOLA going out of other river terminals in Canada, coming out of Thunder Bay even, to export potash over into Europe. We're seeing those moves. The market's trying to keep pressure off inventories in the U.S. system so that this price sticks that they've come out and announced and begins to move up and close that gap. We're still talking over $150 gap between the Brazil-U.S. market. So we are seeing some tons bought and exported as people have the options to do that and seeing the system start to clean itself up. The only wild card in there are Russian tons still coming to the market. And they're coming to the U.S. market because they can get cash and they can find liquidity. And it's one of the few markets that's allowed them to continue to come unrestricted. And so we are seeing a discount for Russian traded tons versus tons produced out of Canada. And I think that should be noted that that probably will continue as we go forward over the next few months preparing for a fall. So to boil it back, recommendation, I would recommend you get somewhere between 35 to 50% covered on your UAN. Be very aware of the energy complex. Urea, our same recommendation there, to be somewhere around 25 to 50% covered for urea for 2023. We also would recommend that you look at selling your grains against it. That's the best way to manage all this risk. And then on phosphates, it's kind of one of those where it feels like you have a little bit of time to buy, same with potash. But I wouldn't wait all the way into kind of the November timeframe to step in and buy. I think that the markets are depressed here in the States. It does say that it's a discount. It's time to look at buying. So I would recommend you start considering that, but also don't feel like when you get off the call, you have to run and check your prices and get something locked in. Sulfate, we've seen a reset on, just real quick to touch on it. We've seen a lot of excess length in Canada getting pushed down into the U.S. market. They're trying to clear and balance themselves. We should see these floor prices stick in kind of the north and Canadian markets. Seems like they're getting enough exported. The U.S. producers are going to have to look to export some of their sulfate length, and we will continue to see a little bit of pressure on that probably for the next 30 to 60 days, then see this floor price start to normalize as they look to export more of their tons. So I would say on sulfate, you have a little bit of time to step in and buy. But let's be aware that the prices have reset and there's opportunities to lock in much better values than where we were a year ago. Zach, I've talked longer than normal and I've probably talked in circles, but maybe we see if you have any questions or anybody else in the team does.
Yeah, I guess I have one question based on this energy complex. I mean, if you look at historically speaking, the last two winters, we've ran into energy issues in the United States. From that standpoint, I'm not saying that we're going to bank on one, but just elaborate again a little bit of production times and downtimes that happened because of those energy issues last winter, especially that could definitely affect the price of nitrogen as it relates to kind of winter fill, if you want to call it that, I guess, Jake, if you can.
Right. It is good to do that. So again, caveat, not energy traders here, but look back to last year, what we saw when the European plants shut down and they went to go sell their gas, we saw our nitrogen urea price, or our urea price is kind of our benchmark, run all the way up to $900 a ton NOLA. We saw UAN get up into the $600 a ton. That volatility still lurks over our shoulders. I'm not here saying that that's what it's going to go to, but the energy complex volatility is there. And with Russia doing what it's doing and being the main driver to this and looking at no resolution in sight, we should all be very aware that volatility is not more than a hand's throw away, right? I mean, it just come at a moment's time. And so therefore, if you can make money buying your fertilizer day, locking in your margin, still strategy number one, continue to do that. Those who took our advice and looked at that a month ago sold some of the market highs on the grain, and then they bought in some very nice low price on fertilizer and have locked in a hell of a margin. That's a strategy that still exists today, and you have to continue to look at it rather than us all trying to be energy traders and figure out when natural gas price is going to spike. There's a lot smarter people doing that than I, and you guys saw how smart we were last year. We did not see $900 urea coming. We recommended price would go up and laid out reasons why, but the extent to which it goes up, very hard to pinpoint when it happens.
Thanks for that explanation, Jake. Going forward, looking at things, I mean, it just kind of feels like it's kind of a wait and see method, but do a little something, but not everything. So I think that's a very well-rounded answer. Thank you for that. At this point, feel free to ask any questions you're after here today, whether it's grain or fertilizer.
Good morning. Thanks, guys, for your conversation and for the information. I just wanted to check in regards to the Indian tender you spoke of. Did that come in at a pretty steep discount, or I guess you didn't speak any numbers there? Just begs the question, just how much will that change what you're thinking?
Yeah, good question. Here's the disparity in the values, right? So Egypt had been trading $700 a ton FOB Egypt. That's into Europe, has kind of a local market advantage, has a huge freight advantage of probably about 40, 50 bucks a ton from some of the other regions. And not everybody can bring in these big boats like that come out of the Middle East. So it's hard to take that North Africa number seriously and say that's the market, but that was the top end. The bottom end of the market had been NOLA. And then from an FOB origin perspective had been, I'm going to take 525 is what the urea price was on average. It's been about a 570 FOB value. This number that was offered in India would indicate a $70 to $80 decrease in urea from that bottom NOLA number. So what have we seen already this morning while we've been on the call? We've seen buying step in around that 480 to 500 NOLA range, which would indicate maybe a $30 pullback in pricing. India usually trades a discount of the world. So even though there's a difference of 70 to 80 bucks, I don't think that full amount translates here back into the US market. But it's basically saying China's going to take this tender. They're going to clear their 500,000 tons into there. And the market's going to figure out and balance itself out right now. So hopefully I answered your question there. $70-$80 pullback is what was in India. We've seen the market in the U.S. pull back to about $35. Don't know if we'll see more. We are seeing some support on the bid side. We'll see if that persists here over the next few days.
Thank you.
With the high premiums on corn and beans across the upper Midwest here, it seems to me like the carryout is a lot lower than what the government says or what causes the hot corn and bean basis.
Yeah, I think you saw evidence of that also in the July-Sep spread, certainly in corn at that point. One of the issues is there are certainly people that have or had some length in one area or another that, from a logistics standpoint, they just could not reach some of those better basis bids. Now we're seeing a situation where the ethanol folks are trying to get the last of their coverage. They are having to pay up for it. The board is certainly not cooperating with the idea that we need to source more corn sales, so the basis has to do the work. I can't doubt that supply from an ending stock standpoint is potentially smaller than what's been put on a sheet of paper. But at the end of the day, you're seeing the people that need to source the corn go out and do it through basis, whereas the price action in the futures contracts indicates that there are still people stuck long, and it feels like they're going to have to get those folks to capitulate before the market's going to be willing to respond to the upside. At least that's a feeling I get from it. The two absolutely feel disconnected.
If we were trying to balance with Europe and stop exports of nitrogen out of, I guess, NOLA or whatever, what kind of prices are we going to have to pay?
That is the reason we're all on the call. And what my bias is, the prices will move up as we go into the winter months. It's very common to make that argument with the energy complex. But again, now we're talking energy policy, and I'm uncomfortable making too many recommendations to you guys based on energy. I look to last year to be our guide, and my bias is that prices will have to move up as they're going to struggle to get everything they need in Europe. That's going to be the price leader, if you will, or that's what's going to feed the drive up in pricing. The floor price is still going to be that China piece, right? It's going to be China setting the price on anthracite coal production and what they let out into the marketplace. So I expect the U.S. to need to import tons. We don't have to do it until we get into first quarter of next year. And we can do it really quickly in a month or two. So it's not like we have to ever trade a premium to the world market. So while we're in these troughs of great depression to the global market, my recommendation is going to be look to buy. And that's why we're making that recommendation. We know we'll have to go at world market pricing, maybe slightly above it for a month or two, so we can have some comfort saying that today and feeling good about this recommendation, Ron.
I think that Yara made a comment a couple days ago that they were threatening to shut down or slow down.
They have done so in their Norwegian production, right? So that's where they're paying this higher natural gas price. And there was an article that I believe CRU put out about how much plant production's been lost. And basically, another 130,000 tons of anhydrous ammonia equivalent has been shut down, mothballed across their system, which helps tighten the S&D. So 113,000 tons a month is what they've idled or put on the sideline. So we're talking a million ton plus plant. You turn that into urea, we're talking 3 million plus tons of urea that you'd have to replace into Europe to balance out the S&D. You can't go get it in the form of UAN because there's not the infrastructure there. There is UAN available to a point, but not the infrastructure there to do it. So it's got to balance itself with urea.
That 3 million tons, is that what percentage of the market?
Oh, it's a small percentage of the market, but it's import demand that we've never had before. You look at it from this perspective, it's a swing of 6 million tons because you had 3 million tons being produced, and now you've got to import it back the opposite way, if that makes any sense at all.
Not encouraging, sorry.
Completely agree. From a buyer's perspective, it's not encouraging. This has been the hardest it's been a long time for you to be a buyer as well as for us to give recommendations. Kind of dread this call because we're talking geopolitical events and energy events that normally aren't the key factor. One fell swoop of the pen by some government is going to change this pricing $50 to $100 a ton. So I go back to managing your risks and not try to think in absolute values, try and think in percents right now. And if you like the percentage spread between your return on your crop and the price on the fertilizer, I would look to lock it in. I'm only comfortable giving advice, not recommendations or anything right now.
It is a tough market, isn't it? Yeah.
Yep. On our positions, we're staying very neutral. We have to. There's too much volatility in this market.
One crazy guy in Russia can change this thing really quickly both ways.
Absolutely. Yep.
Farmer talking here. I'm not sure how much of the audience are farmers, but you mentioned locking in 35 to 50% of 2023 needs on UAN or urea. And what if you're a farmer that likes to get most of his fertilizer on this fall?
It's hard to argue with you, sir, and say don't do that which works for you. And historically speaking, you're right that the lows are right now. The reason I hedge my bet is I'm not going to be right in nitrogen that often. There's a lot of volatility here, as I've already expressed. And so I'm leaving myself some room to be wrong and say, hey, let's buy some more another day. I personally would not wait to buy in the wintertime because of what's going to happen on Europe energy prices. Now, again, I'm making an energy statement here. I like your strategy. If you've been buying in the fall and it's been working for you, get it bought in the fall. I think that's the right way to keep doing it and manage your risk accordingly.
I think the point that needs to be made as well is, again, manage the risk at hand, right? I mean, if you're going to buy in the fall historically, if that's what you do, you got to look at selling grain along with, because you got to continue to manage that risk through all this volatility. Whether you're buying 50% of your spring needs or whether you're buying 100% of your fall needs, you have to look at managing the risk accordingly. And I think that's kind of the point here as well.
You know, last year we saw quite a bit of volatility in freight costs, freight availability, all sorts of reasons for volatility. Do you anticipate those same challenges and struggles as we look into the coming fertilizer delivery year, or maybe we've addressed some of those things, maybe we fixed some of those problems?
Yeah, we've addressed some of those things. As I look forward and I think, what's the biggest pinch point going to be? It's going to be truck freight. That's probably where we're going to hurt the most. Again, vessel freight on the ocean-going vessels has pulled back from where we were. We've seen them come off the highs, partly because the market's gotten used to dealing with this type of volatility. And so we have a premium baked into the price of fuel today. We have a premium baked into the cost of oil as well. If those drop substantially, we'll see a pullback in vessel freight, rail freight over time. They have normalized. There doesn't feel to be that risk premium that was once on there. As an example, we've seen vessel freight come off about $30 a ton. We're kind of in the $40s to $60 a ton range versus what we were looking at was up all the way into the $90 a ton range when we were doing this in the winter of 2022. So I feel like that's normalized, but the truck freight still feels short. You see and hear so much about that being a major problem. Rail lines are going to be the rail lines. They're struggling getting people hired, which means their service is going to be poor. But the rail piece, I think we feel like we have enough optionality. We're going to be fine and comfortable. And we're going to continue to be nervous about the truck. So kind of speaking about it from our deck, that's how we look to solve the spring season and where we think the pinch points will be when this thing comes full circle. Any other questions?
Let's just take a bit of a wild card case here that Putin decides to react to sanctions in the middle of January. He shuts the pipeline down, Nord Stream 1, 2, whatever, and starves Europe for natural gas. How ugly does it get on the fertilizer prices?
As ugly as last year, if not higher. So last year we saw it go to 900 NOLA. It looked like we were going to head into the $1,000 a ton range very quickly. You get to a point where you have to start rationalizing fertilizer away from first world producers. So that's a hard question to answer. Because at $1,000 urea, the profitability is starting to get sapped out of the equation very quickly, right? How many people will cut back on nitrogen, though, in their crop application? And that's, I think, also part of the key equation. I think if cutbacks are going to be made, it's going to be in a lot of other areas. Nitrogen is going to be the last thing to be cut, in my opinion. But again, I'm not wearing the farmer hat. So it could get real ugly, as bad as last year, if not higher. And it could sustain itself if it lasted. That's the problem, is it could run to $900, and it's because Putin says something. He could change his mind in 30 days, then we slide back down another $200-$300. So extreme cases for volatility, you don't want to be caught buying during that period of volatility, because you'll be second guessing yourself, have I found the low again, or am I doing this just because of this Russia reaction and whatnot? And right now there's less volatility, less issues driving the price today. So it feels like we're kind of more at floor prices for the year.
Could you touch on ash and phosphate markets quick, where we are today and what you're thinking for this fall?
Right. The bed's kind of made this fall. I don't see much volatility in either two of those prices. But what I will say is I see oversupply growing slightly as we get into first quarter, second quarter. So I think there will be a correction on P&K pricing. The biggest recommendation I'd have is what can you push off into the spring? If you could get, you know, 50% of your phosphate applied in the spring or potash, you'll probably save money versus buying this fall. If you bought for this fall and you're going to apply this fall, you're not going to save much money by waiting right now. The market's kind of sad.
Sounds good.
Yep. Good luck with that.
Thanks.
Did the tariff come off of all the fertilizer then?
The tariff did not get applied to UAN. The government deemed to not apply it. On the phosphates, that tariff is still very much active, or let's call it what it is. It's not a tariff. It's a countervailing duty, but it acts the same as a tariff. It's basically to help the U.S. production industry be able to have more return on their product versus the importer. But on phosphates, you still pay a 10% tariff for Russian product, 20% tariff for Moroccan product. And that's where a lot of your phosphate comes from globally. And we've stated before, we're not in favor of that particular countervailing duty. We think that ultimately is a tax on you and the consumer of food and whatnot. So we're not a fan of seeing that there.
Well, the reason why I asked, because I heard on the news yesterday that they had reversed that.
That's only on the UAN case. So each one of these tariffs are case by case.
Okay.
So there's two bodies of the government that do this. There's the Department of Commerce and the International Trade Commission. I'll probably get this wrong, but I'm going to shoot from the hip here. The DOC recommended that there were tariffs levied, and the ITC said, we're not going to levy the tariffs. That was on UAN fertilizer. Ultimately, that means nothing gets applied. The duties that they recommended that should be applied are not applied. And so therefore, the price of UAN is not affected by import duties.
Well, why did the Department of Commerce not take any rebuttals as far as you couldn't contact them and complain about it or anything?
Well, they have a period for review and they do take it. So there were some very active groups that were vocal in this. You had the ARA, the American Ag Retail Association, was vocal in it. You had the Corn Growers Association, and I also believe the Bean Growers Association had some involvement in that whole process in writing letters and in kind of petitioning the government. Now, on the phosphate side, that did catch the industry a little bit flat-footed. A lot of people were aware of it, weren't sure what was going to happen. We've all seen now the price of phosphates ran up. So I think the activation on the nitrogen side was a little bit greater because we just had been through a period on the phosphate side that the market was caught a little bit flat-footed on.
Thank you.
You bet. So, Zach, I think I want to close letting them know that we're going to have a sugar promotion that's going to roll out to them, a biostimulant promotion on our ADM CS43. Will be coming out over the next 30 days, and keep your eye on that. We'll probably notify you of it through the portal, and we'll keep you up to date on pricing.
I'm going to put a wrap on today's call. The next call that we're going to have is going to be August 17, 2022. Until then, you can learn more about ADM Farm Direct Fertilizer. Go to admfertilizer.admadvantage.com. Talk to everybody again on August 17th. Thanks a lot, everybody.